The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of the Coalition or of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Hello and welcome to Throwdown, episode 171. I am your host, Emilio Lopez, and I am joined by Brett Murdoch.
What's up, everybody?
Carlos Romero.
What up, what up, what up?
And Mr. Adam Vale.
Oi.
So yeah, guys, you may notice there are quite a bit of people missing from this episode. Tony is gallivanting around the city, got stuck on the train, so he's having all kinds of trouble. He's also drunk as hell. He called me up. He's like, "Oh man, I'm so drunk. Oh, I can't." Oh, God. So I'm like, "All right, we'll handle this." And let's see what else. Chris is just not feeling good right now. So this week is a pretty light show, nothing fancy. We don't got any little extras to talk about right now, so let's just get right into it. So let's get to our featured topic, which is Xbox One sells 35 million. That's pretty damn good. I'm impressed.
Well, that's the thing. They said that we know that PS4 is in the lead by a huge margin, but it's not like the Xbox One is not selling.
Yeah. You
know, they're both performing well right now, so it's just one's in the lead. That's all. People are running out there and buying them, but
their marketing tactics of talking about hours played, despite my awareness of it, apparently worked, because I thought their sales numbers over 35 million. Because isn't PlayStation over 70?
Something like that. It was like 60, 70 million.
Yeah, it's like maybe like what, 74 million around there.
Yeah, I did not know the discrepancy. I didn't know it was almost 2-1, and that actually. No. I'm not talking shit, Xbox gamers. Cool down before you get your pants in a tizzy. That actually explains a lot about why they're not leveraging more power, because they don't have, you know, if it's a 2-1 market share, then it's got to be tough for them negotiating deals for exclusive games.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I definitely think that it's definitely going to be a little bit of a slow crawl for these guys. But I think once they get something going, I'm hoping at least that it'll just jump up a little bit more. You know what I mean?
We're so entrenched in this generation that it's gonna be tough for a lot of people to jump over right now. I mean, it's not in the average consumer's mind, but here in the next year or two, people, you know, the question is gonna actually become pretty important. Of, you know, do I really want to adopt this late in the generation? And we've all seen how much the tide can turn when somebody comes out with their new console.
Yeah.
So my theory now is that Microsoft is probably abandoning the whole, you know, iterative generation of console thing. Like they probably want to make a new Xbox and have a clear and defined generation line.
Yeah, definitely.
Help them get back in the race.
Yeah, because normally, like what I was thinking, at the end of every generation, we have the best games that come out, and that's when people just get a console and have a whole backlog load of games. But I don't know. It seems like this generation, it just seems like they're kind of like, this is how it's going, I guess. It's like we're throwing in games here and there, and it's like there's not much to look forward to, at least on the Xbox side exclusively. So it's...
Well, they shot themselves in the foot by it. We know that if it's worth playing for the most part, they're going to find a way to re-release it.
Yeah.
Right.
So
the idea of like, oh, I can go out and get this whole backlog, like, yeah, but, you know, it's kind of the same deal when you were looking at buying a Switch. It's just like, I mean, yeah, you could get a Wii U for a discount price, but all those games are going to be on the Switch because that's what Nintendo do.
Yeah. It's one thing about this is that it actually did outsell the PS4 Pro in the US. So,
yeah, and that makes a lot of sense, cuz Xbox One X is heavily marketed. PS4 Pro, It just seemed like it was like kind of like a shoe-in or like a throwaway.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, it's there.
Yeah, it's, if you're planning on getting on, you know, PS4, or you can get the Pro, or you can just get the other one. I think they, you know, for at least for Sony, they never really were going to be promoting it in that sort of way. You know, they always kind of saw it as, you know, I mean, at least what Microsoft was saying was just as the enthusiast console. It really is, the bread and butter is really just PlayStation 4 normal, you know. That's the one that most people and most of us in the room have.
Yeah, well, Sony's also not good at supporting their stuff sometimes. Let's all be honest here.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, we go back to like the Move and we go to the Vita or the PSP where they just kind of do this weird, like, not advertising, you know?
Heck, even PSVR, like, PSVR has been doing well, but, have we really seen that much about it? Like, has there been that much hype on the PSVR?
No.
Like, it's just doing well on its own.
Yeah, it's just word of mouth. It's one of those type of things, and it's just online reviews.
It's a weird, I mean, we've always said this on the show, like, with Sony's always had, like, this odd way of not really promoting any of the things that they actually do. You know what I mean?
Right. And on the contrary, Xbox, I think they do a good job at selling their stuff. Like the Xbox One X, it's like the most powerful console ever.
Mm-hmm.
It's 4K. It can do this. It can do HDR. It puts all that stuff in the forefront. So people know what they're getting into when they buy it, especially consumers, they have those taglines whenever they see this console. But with PlayStation, we've noticed, like last year when the PS, or 2 years ago when the PS Pro launched, it was just released. I guess it did decently, but the PS4 Slim released maybe a month before that, and it just blew it out of the water in terms of sales. So people just gravitated towards that and didn't really mind the PS4 Pro
mm-hmm.
as much.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think we have anything more to say about that one. I mean, you know.
I could pat and vamp a little bit.
Take us in a direction, Brett.
Okay, so since we now know some real hard numbers and we know that there's a 2-to-1 market share, what can Microsoft do? Because we've all kind of ragged on them a little bit about not having enough exclusives and having to have real true exclusives to pull people back into their camp. But now that we know that they have a 2-to-1 market share, that's going to be really difficult for most third-party developers. So with this information in hand, what does Microsoft do to pad their games library with exclusives? How do they even go about doing the thing that we all want them to do?
Buy studios. And studios that have some games already that they can just push off, that maybe they were just on Steam and they weren't on PS4, and they were like, hey, all right, this is going to be one of our console exclusives, just like we did at Battlegrounds. That's the only thing I can think of. Right?
Well, I think buying up-and-coming studios would be a good idea. They've done the whole let's get Rare, the big fish, and like out of everywhere, and they completely failed at that. It flopped, that whole thing with Rare. But if you get, I mean, they could start with getting that studio that did Cuphead, for one. That's the studio MHDR, I think they're called.
Yeah.
They could get like studios like that haven't released that many games, but they've released a good promising game that has done well. And yeah, I mean, obviously they have money for days, but I don't think they're willing to invest as much on studios as as we would expect them to do. But man, starting off with at least like giving people some games to look forward to, maybe four top-notch exclusive games every year would give them a boost.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because they're getting all the third-party stuff, so that's in the bag right now. If they can just promote four games, and I'm not even talking about like Halo and Gears and Forza, because those always come. So we can get like four exclusive games released every year that are big titles that get people excited, I think would do wonders for Microsoft.
I would agree with that. I'd also like to add, Microsoft has 1 foot kind of already in the PC gaming market, so they could do what Valve did, or old Valve did, where they're really looking into the people, the really successful modders and coders who are overhauling games and hiring them as young talent. You know, that's, I've said it before, I'll say it again. That's why we have Portal. That's why we have Portal 2. And I don't know why we're never going to get Portal 3, because that has nothing to do with anything. But they could look at a lot of indie game developers and essentially use the market as a test bed, as a focus group. See what games are a little rough around the edges, but the people are really picking up on. Pick those studios up for pennies on the dollar, or hire the people in, give them a deal, and then give them a platform to make their game. And then you have all of these, you know, exclusive kind of innovative games. And even if, you know, only one out of five of them really flies, you're going in with a little bit more proof. You know, this game is, you know, it's already there. It's, you know, Undertale, for instance, the people who made Undertale, like, I'm not personally huge on that game, but people fucking loved that game. Mm-hmm. Hire those people. Hire the people who made Binding of Isaac. Hire the people who made Salt and Sanctuary. Some of these games, and this is a bit of a shitty comment, are only indie in their nature. They're only limited in their graphics because that's all that the developer can really afford. You know, like, there are some people who are making indie games not because they want to make indie games, but because they don't have the budget, the team for AAA games. But they're incredibly talented individuals nonetheless, and those are the people that I think Microsoft needs to set their sights on. So even they could even just open a couple of new studios and fill them full of this young talent and release indie games, you know, or you know, kind of release you know, little micro games or skeletons of games, and see what people like, and what you know, when they find something that people jump on, they bring it back, they church it up a little bit, they give it the full AAA development process, and there you have it. A good example of that is Breath of the Wild. They remade the original Zelda with some of the Breath of the Wild mechanics. They play tested it and they really enjoyed it. It worked for a while. That's the kind of thing that I'm thinking of. You could, you know, have that go to, you know, somebody's made that game already. Somebody's made a little indie dungeon crawler, and you could just sort by Steam most popular and be like, oh, a lot of people really like this kind of thing. Harvest Moon, for instance. Not Harvest Moon. What's the Stardew Valley.
Yeah.
Stardew Valley was made by one person who loved Harvest Moon but didn't really like where Harvest Moon was going. And they made a phenomenal hit that a ton of people like. Now, granted, it's going to be a little harder, you know, to pick those people up once they've gotten that money, but that would be a great guy to have on your team. The Harvest Moon team should have absolutely headhunted that dude immediately because Stardew Valley is going to eclipse Harvest Moon. They need to bring that guy in as like a consultant with equal power to the lead developer. Be like, sorry, guy, this dude's beating your pants off in sales. He's half in charge now. Meet your new co-boss.
Well, and these exclusive titles, like, it's they're part of the brand. It's like you get a PlayStation and you know what you have coming. You know you have God of War. You know you have Uncharted. You know you have, you know, a lot of Japanese games that for some reason only show up on the PlayStation that pretty much come out in Xbox, like Persona, Yakuza. Why aren't these games on Xbox?
Plus the faith of, like, you know, if they're going to make another Last of Us, it's most likely going to be a PlayStation exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, not most likely. It's definitely
going to be one.
You have all these games that you know are coming, and then there's all those, well, if this game ever comes, I know what console it's going to be on, so I'm just going to hedge my bet. So it's not only the games that you know, but the games that you know might come.
Heck, even when when Final Fantasy 15 came out, I was shocked that it was on Xbox.
Yeah, well,
I forgot.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is that the last one was on there.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm so used to it being, I mean, quite real, like after Nintendo, a PlayStation title.
Yeah,
I was like, what? This is on Xbox? Oh, Final Fantasy 13. Okay.
That is also something that kind of did happen on the previous Final Fantasy before 15. What was it? 14 or 13, I can't remember. The one with
14 was MMO,
The one with lightning in it, right? And that one did a little bit better on the PlayStation side because people just associated it with PlayStation since the past games were all on there.
Yep, Metal Gear 2, that's like another one. So people still, even after, I mean, what, Final Fantasy 13 went multiplat years ago.
Yeah.
So did Metal Gear. So it's like people still associate these as PlayStation games.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why their brand carries on for years. That's why they're destroying the competition, because Metal Gear Solid console is the PlayStation for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how they see it. And that's unfortunately gonna hamper against people like Xbox.
I mean, it's funny because there's so many things that Microsoft could buy. I mean, like, you know, when the Hitman franchise, you know, when those guys decided to go off on their own end, I could have definitely seen Hitman be like a friggin' Xbox. I mean, even, you know, if they, I mean, there's some other, you know, studios that have very Xbox centric sorts of games that they, I mean, why, you know, I don't know what the deal is with Ubisoft and Splinter Cell, but I mean, shit, wouldn't it be awesome if Microsoft actually did get the rights to just make Splinter Cell games? Like, that was just their thing?
Yeah, because, I mean, Splinter Cell was something that we always played on Xbox. Like, I mean, I fucking love Chaos Theory and Conviction. It's like, it's something that I always look forward to playing on my Xbox, but it's just not there anymore.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Fable is another one. Like, a lot of franchises have died.
Yeah.
Man, yep. I Fable 2 was one of my favorite games last gen. And it's just, it went from, and Fable 3 was okay, but man, it went from a franchise that we could look forward to just dead in a matter of years. They didn't even release a game that flopped to do that.
Yeah.
They just went straight from mainline, like, system selling title, and by the fourth one it was pretty much shovelware. I have no idea how that, and it's not like it didn't do well either. That's the weird thing. It's not like it ever got a bad response. I mean, even three shortcomings were at least made up for a little bit by the fact they had a more robust multiplayer system. Like, I would agree, I like two better. But three, you could actually make your character. Like, two, you had a placeholder character when you played multiplayer, and I didn't like that.
Yeah.
But three, like, I played the shit out of three with Rachel, and, like, I could actually bring my character into her world, and vice versa. That kind of made up for a little bit of the loss of mechanics. But yeah, each generation, they dumbed it down a little bit. Each time, people were like, whatever, it's still Fable, I still like it.
Mm-hmm.
Even through the third game, which was not the best. And then immediately they're like, we're going to turn this into a shovelware party game, and then they cancel it. Pissed in your Cheerios.
I'm wondering if it, you know, at least the executives over there are like, well, if this isn't making X amount of money, well, then we should just drop it, you know?
Yeah. And also, I want to mention another thing, that an exclusive that Microsoft lost in a span of a generation was online multiplayer. Xbox Live was the king.
Yeah.
It's something that just it had no competition. PSN when it first launched was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was terrible.
I mean, PSN was so horrible that the store didn't even run right. Like, the thing that you get, all the games and the DLC and all that stuff was just horrible there.
But remember, it was at an E3 where one of the Sony reps, and they made a song and everything about it, where he just said it was an afterthought. They were like, well, we did focus reviews and stuff, and our audience just really isn't into the whole multiplayer, so we're not really focusing on that.
Yeah,
and that was their answer to when they announced that Xbox was coming out with a whole online experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's always their answer, though.
Well, you know,
we've done,
I think,
our research and found out our clients don't want faster internet.
Yeah, I think it's partly that, but I think, you know, when you ask people who don't have that sort of stuff, they're just like, oh yeah, I don't really play online. You know, it's like, oh, it's that sort of thing where it's like they didn't ever think to do that. But I mean, to be honest, if they really wanted to be future proof, you know, Sony really should have made that decision. And when they finally did, they realized that the console that they built really couldn't open enough ports to run a decent online service. Like, I mean, you
it
had
still
to
still runs horrible. Like, every once in a while, I'll turn on my PS3 and just go into the store, and it's so bad.
Yeah, the store does freeze up and stuff like that. It's, you know,
you can tell the system isn't built around it. Mm. Like, man, if here's what Microsoft needs to do, and I know that they'll never do it, but at the beginning of next generation, just announce this generation, we're not having a paid online service.
Oh, like just pull it back.
And you'll get free games, but you don't have to pay to play multiplayer games and just watch the mass exodus go to Microsoft's side.
Yeah, like let's say if online multiplayer was just free now.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying.
But I mean, that's essentially
Xbox Gold for free. They just need to take multiplayer from behind the paywall, and you will see.
It's funny because that's exactly PlayStation Plus on PS3. They had a full free online service, and the Plus was the thing for the free games and all the other additional junk. So that would be them like switching sides. You know what I mean?
Well, they jump back and forth, but that discussion is going to come up again when Sea of Thieves comes out, because mm-hmm. it's on that pass, that $10 pass. But if you want to play with your friends and have the big boat and stuff, you need Xbox Live Gold.
Yeah.
You know, so
you want the big boat.
I'm seeing all these forms of people like, yeah, I'm just going to do $10. I want to play it. Yeah, well, me and my buddies, we'll just play it and run through it and stuff. I'm like, no. Unless you have gold, then you're cool. But if you don't have gold and you're just like, I'm just going to jump in on this, no, it doesn't work. You're going to have to get that other subscription.
Yeah. I mean, unless they'll just do like a one, you know, like a little short subscription to the Xbox Live to get to do the online multiplayer.
They need to, because a lot of people are under the impression it's just $10 and there you go.
No, it's $10 and you get the game. I mean, yeah. I think you can play Sea of Thieves offline. I don't think you need to play it.
No, you play by yourself, but the thing is that you'll have a little boat. Mm-hmm. And then if you come across other people, they could just rob you just like that. It's mm-hmm. sort of like the way the Division works going into Dark Zone. Mm-hmm. I could go to Dark Zone by myself, but I'm going to get murdered. I need a crew of people.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that Microsoft needs to do, you know, and I feel like I'm sure they know all the things that they have, and they definitely want to keep that sort of momentum going forward.
And I want to mention, as far as considering me, if anyone considers me an Xbox hater, I'm trying the best to get these guys to Sony's level, because I have an OG Xbox, an Xbox One S, and I'm considering buying an X. So they gotta step their game up, man.
Yeah,
that's the only reason why we're so critical of them, is because we want a viable competition to Sony. We don't want them to conquer everyone like this.
Yeah, we don't.
Two
want
to one
that.
Is.
Yeah,
oh, good.
Yeah, we don't want to see that there be a place without any sort of like. You know,
competition.
Competition or on par competition. You know what I mean?
Two to one is too much.
Yeah,
I think that's what Carlos was about to say. Like, that is, this is not a happy news story.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sad news story. As much as I'd like to be like, you know, congratulations on your 35 million. When in the context of what we're talking about, I'm not happy to talk about a 2-to-1 market share. That's not good for any of us.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have three healthy, viable systems all pushing each other to be the best. Mm-hmm. I did. A lot of you are probably too young to remember that. That used to be a thing.
Yeah,
and that was when some of the best video games. That was that golden age of video games. Having one company dominate so profoundly over, you know, 35 million, and what's Switch at like 15 million, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that.
Something like that.
That is way too big of a gap, man. That's not good for any of us.
Yeah. So yeah, moving on. THQ returns. Essentially, what's happening here is THQ Nordic acquired Deep Silver, meaning Saints Row is back at THQ. Welcome back.
But is it the same group, same owners? I mean, I thought it was just THQ was completely gone.
Well,
then that
yes,
Nordic bought it.
Yes,
bought
that's what it is. It's THQ Nordic is essentially, it's not the same people there.
Yeah.
That it's essentially the Nordic Games bought all the assets of, you know, the leftover assets of THQ, and then they just said, you know what, let's just call ourselves THQ Nordic, and that's it. So, I mean, granted, there are a lot of the same studios that are still there, you know, doing games, so now they're all pretty much there. I mean, I think what THQ Nordic has Darksiders, or was it Deep Silver that had Darksiders? One of them had it. Anyway,
it was.
Then they have the Metro. the Metro series.
It had Red Faction. I know that.
Yeah, there's Metro.
MX. It was. MX-ATV. Oh, yeah, it was Metro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a big deal because that was one of the big ones. And the one they didn't pick up, and that was the one that 2K picked up, was the WWE series. Because that was also on there. That and the UFC.
Homefront as well. It's crazy. Like, if you think about it, they're just THQ goes bankrupt, disbands, a lot of its property got sold to different places.
Yeah.
And it's that, like,
sad.
We're getting it back together. It's like, oh,
Tomb Raider. Remember Tomb Raider?
Tomb Raider no, that wasn't that, through THQ.
That was
Eidos. That's now Square Enix, or part of Square Enix. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's cool to see. Essentially, it's kind of, we kind of went around in a circle and just came back around again for this one. It's interesting that this kind of happened. I'm wondering, how much why it actually happened. Was it because the last Deep Silver game just didn't do that great?
Maybe they just found out it was up for sale and said, "Yeah, you know what? Why not?"
Yeah. So what these guys are getting is this, essentially THQ is getting is back, obviously, Saints Row. They're getting Homefront, and they're getting Dead Island and Metro all coming back. So let's see.
I'd like to see another Dead Island, man.
I'd like to see a Dead Island that actually captures the intrigue of the trailers.
That was a great trailer. But did you ever play that 8-bit version that they made?
No, I've never played that. Yeah.
They made an 8-bit side-scroller. That was pretty cool. It was like a Double Dragon type thing.
You just beat the shit out of zombies.
Yeah, it was weird, yeah. I think it's on all the consoles.
Yo, man. I mean, Dead Island, so I understand why you like it, Brett. But for me, and this is kind of something you always harp on with PC gaming. So I got Dead Island on PC, right? And I started playing it, and I just got infested by modders. And I'm I can't even survive in this game.
Really?
Yeah.
On console, eh?
I don't know. It was on PC.
Oh.
On your PC?
Yeah, that's... God damn it. On his PC?
On my PC?
Yeah, so I was like... I don't know if it was... Was it co-op? I think I was playing co-op on the game or something like that. I just remember someone was just killing me every time. I didn't even get a chance to breathe. So I'm like... I guess this is it for me and Dead Island.
Oh, somebody was playing the monster mode, and they were hunting through the city as a modded monster. That fucking sucks.
Boo.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Hey, the trailer's good.
Yeah, the trailers are nice. The only thing I just would love to see them somehow capture that in the actual game. I mean, those both of them are pretty cool. Yeah. So, but yeah, it'll be definitely good to see that happen again, and also see Saints Row again. Hopefully if they're working on a new one, it'll come out eventually. I mean, there is a space. Because Saints Row hasn't, they don't do the online stuff, do they? No, they right? They never really had a like.
Yeah, they have online.
They had online mode.
The other one also has co-op. They had online and co-op.
Mm.
Out of hell was co-op play.
What if they went the Grand Theft Auto way? Because remember, if like, Saints Row is kind of like the crazy version of Grand Theft Auto, where everybody's...
This last one didn't have co-op. That's what everybody was bitching about, because it should have had co-op players.
What was the name of that one? The
Agents of Mayhem.
Agents of Mayhem, yeah. It was just a single-player experience. And I feel like a lot of people got, once they found out it was not multiplayer, and you had these kind of unique characters that were hanging out, it's too bad that you couldn't have, like, a jump-in, jump-out co-op. The thing about, like, a lot of games don't seem to do jump in, jump out co-op.
A lot of games do it.
Like, no, I mean, like, the way Gears of War did it.
Yeah, a lot of the Division did it.
You can just go through the story mode
You could just go through the story mode and just jump in and jump out.
Because I remember, like, especially with, like, Resident Evil 5 and Gears of War had that really cool aspect where you're just like, oh yeah, I'm playing. I'll jump in. Yeah. Oh yeah, and I don't want to play anymore. I'm jumping out.
No, that's the cool thing. A lot of these games, and that's why I keep telling people when they're like, oh well, I'm not crazy about that. It's awesome. Especially when you play with friends, it's great. Great experience.
Yep. So that's THQ is back in a way, some sort of odd way. Anyway, next topic. So Senator confronts the ESRB over loot box classification and addiction. So it's finally getting out there. It's just like weaseling its way through. If you remember, a while ago, you had that senator from Hawaii.
That one, yeah, that's putting into place. I think that's a bill that they're trying to get passed.
Well, so. You know, the thing is, you know, the sad thing is that this sort of stuff had been around for so long. They've been using it in friggin' cell phone games and all kinds of other stuff where it's like you pay and then you just randomly get stuff. I guess the best idea version of this would be kind of like cards,
cell phone games are the worst. Some video games do shitty practices. Cell phone games go out of their way.
It's addicts. The thing about cell phone games is that they are outside of the reach of the ESRB, aren't they?
Because they're just applications they're just a part of what Apple allows. Like Apple is pretty much king on what comes out in their ecosystem and Android as well.
Yeah, so it's like the Wild West over there. So they can get away with pretty much anything that they want to. Only now they started looking into all the loot box stuff, in Apple. But it's like, yo, Candy Crush or any one of those things, they all use this sort of stuff.
They makes bank, man. Mm-hmm. So I got a story. And I don't know if I've mentioned this in the show before. I was heading home from work and I got a call from my nephew, and he's like, can you come here? I need help. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? So I go, right? And we went to his my other nephew, his little brother, on his Xbox. And he's like, can you get a refund on this? And I'm like, refund on what? And I look, over $200 within a week on microtransactions for Roblox.
Whoa.
And I'm like, how the hell did you do this? I'm like, and I noticed like his Xbox didn't even ask him for anything. Like it was just tied to a PayPal account because Xbox, here's the thing. Xbox does a really shitty practice when it comes to Xbox Live Gold. You can't just buy a 1 month or a 12 month subscription and have Xbox Live Gold. You have to tie it to a credit card or something like that.
They automatically take it, right?
The codes. You get the digital codes. That's what I do. I just get the digital codes.
So what happened? Well, they had a paid off 12 months, right? Mm-hmm. So in advance, and we try to remove the credit card from the account. And it wouldn't allow us. It said you need something in replace of what you're trying to remove. And we couldn't remove the credit card. I don't know if he did it intentionally or he did it unintentionally or hackers or something. But apparently $200 wasted on Roblox microtransactions.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, I get it. I'm not a parent, so I'm guessing a lot of parents go through a lot of this stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely, and especially if the parents are not very knowledgeable about the consoles that they're buying for their kids, because I mean, you know, there's all these parental controls that you could put on the consoles, you know, to stop certain things from happening. Even Sony just added a bunch of new stuff on there, but officially there is no, like, unless you do that, there is no way to stop it. You know, like if your kid, because again, your kid doesn't know the value of money. They just say, oh, if you want to get more stuff, you just hit this button and then it just does it.
Right.
You know, it's not like you had to ask. It's not like like in the old days when we were kids, you literally had to ask mom and dad for quarters or a dollar bill so that you could go to the actual, actual arcade and pay the money.
Right.
You know, there was something that there's some sort of a physical transaction that had to happen and you needed to get there. But now it's just like, okay, yeah, just put the credit card on there and just let them roll with it. And that's how it happens to a lot of parents with their cell phones, where they have their kid's cell phone attached to their service. you know, like iTunes or Google.
Is with a lot of the in-game purchases, transactions, is that at first the original game itself may need a parent to activate or you need a credit card. And then once you approve that you're in, that's it. It'll never prompt you again. So if the kid says, oh, yeah, I want to buy these packs, it's going to let them do it because like, hey, you bought this already, so it's good. And they need to implement some kind of system where it'll constantly ask. I'm sure in some games there are settings, you know, and parents just need to be aware of it. Because it's so far that, yeah, the console can do it. PlayStation can probably put some parental stuff for the ordering, we know, with the codes and Xbox. But what about the in-game microtransactions? Mm-hmm. I mean, once the game is purchased, okay, that's it. That's where it's done. But what about the in-game stuff? There should be a setting in there blocking it, or where it would ask for a password, and then that's when the parent can come and say, hey, what are you trying to do? Oh, well, I want to get the season pass. And because right now, most games, I've never seen one that asked for any other additional information. You know, so if someone, the kid says, hey, I want all the maps. What, $60? Yeah, press this X button. Boom, it's done.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So they got to come up with some way.
And probably what a lot of people do, or a lot of these gaming developers do, is they put maybe the in-game currency as like the bigger, the bigger signage on the label.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they don't see that, or maybe they don't recognize that this is $20. And it's like, okay, so I'll buy a couple of these, and it's like they don't even notice what they're spending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because so also their in-game currency doesn't actually amount to actual real money. So that's right. Like, hey, buy for a dollar, get 50,000 points. Well, 50,000 points is really not that much. You know right. what I mean? But it sounds like a lot. But I think there's also rules against that too, essentially using real currency values inside of these games. So if you're paying for something, you know, within the game, they're not allowed to say to you, hey, this thing costs about eight, you know, this item costs $8. You're really just paying for the coins to buy whatever is in the game. Unlike DLC, which is like, you know, something that's sold at the PlayStation or Xbox.
Not only that, it's a fixed purchase. It's mm-hmm. you're just buying one thing. I don't think you can even buy it twice.
Yeah.
So yeah, those microtransactions you can just
the packs buy. You could keep buying. I know for a fact a lot of those packs like FIFA and all of them, you can just keep buying them. You know, they don't even care. They'll just like, what, $100? Bling, what, another 100? Okay, whatever.
Yeah, just for the randomized thing. But the funny thing is that you know, again, you were talking about this before with foot, but it's like it's all been there. It just took a Star Wars to do it.
That's it. That's why I keep telling people, they're like, oh no, this is different. No, it's not different.
It's the same thing. It's literally like EA has enacted this loot box microtransaction system within all of their titles in some way, shape, or form.
I feel like mm-hmm. Star Wars, though, was the worst offender. Not because it was the biggest title, but just because, you know, somebody sat down, did the math, and, you know.
Well, yeah, it's because 7,000
now 1,000 hours to unlock it. Like, okay, you've gone. Each time it's gotten exponentially worse, and this time you're like, okay, now you've made it unfeasible for anybody to be able to.
People are actually looking into this stuff rather than just taking these things as face value. You know, you look at this thing, it's like, okay, how many hours will it actually take for me to continuously play this game to unlock all this stuff? Oh, 5 years or whatever crazy amount they calculated it at. And then how many microtransactions you would need to get every single item inside of the game. That's crazy, you know, but I'm glad that at least now that we have people like just looking into these sorts of progression systems and being, no. This is not right. This doesn't make any sense the way this costs or how long it actually takes to. So moving on. Disney, this is actually a rumor that I heard about, but I mean, we've heard about. It's been all over the net, but apparently Disney may give the Star Wars license to Activision, they're looking to, or they're shopping it around, which is, it's interesting. I mean, Activision did have the Star Wars license way back in the day, you know, during Episode One era, I think. So, what do you guys think of that? I mean, it's I don't know. It feels like the same thing. It's like EA or Activision. They'll probably do the same goddamn thing anyway, right?
Yeah. No, well, no, I don't think they'll do the same thing, but I still don't believe this. I think this is just, it's too soon.
I think so too. I definitely think that if, you know, I mean, obviously Disney did lose quite a bit of money off of, they did lose quite a bit of money off of this microtransactions bullshit from the Star Wars Battlefront 2. So, I mean, I don't know.
It just sounds too much like what we want to hear, though. Yeah. Like, going back to Activision being taken out of EA's hands, like, too many elements of the story are, they fit too well, so I don't buy it. I would believe that Disney is shopping around the license because they're not really happy with the performance of EA. But again, like, it's just the perfect mix. Like, okay, so you know that Disney is probably shopping the license around. Like, that sounds like something that's very plausible. And so you take something that seems like it's probably true, where, or at least they're not going to renew the license contract with EA. So you take something that's probably true, mix it with a little bit of what people want to hear. And that, oh, Star Wars is going back to Activision, and Activision actually treated the Star Wars brand right back in the day. So it's, I imagine there are elements that are true to this, but I don't buy this story.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a grain of salt, as we would say. It's,
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, but I almost feel like it's almost like they're going to, it's like the lesser of two evils. You know what I mean? You got, it's like, hey, it's EA, the evilest, considered by most the evilest video game company that ever existed, or the other evilest company that ever existed, which is Activision.
Yeah, when you find yourself being like, go Activision.
And then Bobby Kotick shows up with his creepy looking face. Ooh. So yeah, it's again, it's a grain of salt. I don't know. I mean, if they do, all power to them, I guess. But, you know, who knows how long it'll take them to start developing games and all that other stuff. I mean, and, you know, also Activision has been known to do, like, bullshit jobs, you know, or, like, they'll grab a license and they'll just put out, like, a junk game just to keep the license. So, I don't know. Next one, and I think this is our last topic right now. Shaq Fu 2 is coming this spring.
Oh shit!
Yep, Shaq Fu, the game that somehow somebody felt that they needed to make a sequel to probably one of the worst fighting games ever made.
The thing is, I mean, I know Shaq still does TV, but is he still that relevant to have a game again?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I think he's known, but I think there's a whole generation of people that never knew him as a basketball player. They just
maybe
think
he's behind him,
huh?
I say, you mean the guy from the Gold Bond commercials?
Yeah. The guy from the Gold Bond commercials, or the guy who hosts I think he's on ESPN, right?
He's on TNT.
He's on TNT. So it's like, you know, that guy, the host.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, Shaq Fu came out when Shaq was at the height of its powers.
Yeah.
It's like a big Kazam at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's like, I guess.
I feel like it's more of an ironic thing that they're doing. But from the way this game looks, if you've ever seen the trailer of it, it looks more like a beat 'em up rather than a 1-on-1 fighting game like the original one was. Yeah. So there might be a little bit of hope on it, but also at the same time, it's like, do I really want to play a game with Shaquille O'Neal in it, beating up people on the?
I don't know who sat there and went, you know what the world needs? Shaq Fu.
I think Shaquille O'Neal said that. I think he's like, yo, I think we need to make a new Shaq Fu. It's time. You know? Go bomb medicated powder. You know?
And he does that little shimmy.
Yeah. Yeah, he does that little guy. So.
Yeah. Man, if we're getting a Shaq Fu 2 and not... like Brett mentioned earlier, Portal 3. It's like, that's the biggest travesty of video games ever.
Yes, yeah.
What the fuck, 2018?
I mean,
you fucked me up, Ben, because, like, I always, like, that every month that comes into my head, it's like, Portal 3, is that ever coming? Like, Portal 2 was so good.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Like, it's like, how can you improve on a game that was already amazing?
Yeah, I remember.
Just make more of it. That's all I want.
Well, you know, they closed down that studio. The guys that developed it, I think they went on to develop a game called Quantum Conundrum after they kind of rejoined and made a new studio. And I think even that company went down, too.
Yeah, but the thing about that is that it's not a studio that made that game. It's a person.
Well, I mean, I think it was the person that did create Portal or somebody who was with that team. Created
they put a really successful team around them, but like the success of the first Portal game was pretty much like that was just a cleaned up version of like their game that they made on their own as an indie developer, and Portal 2 was what happened when they put a development team with actual writers and you know the whole AAA deal behind that person. But the thing about it is there are some creative types that are so good at what they do that they have a huge influence over the project.
Gabe Newell.
So like they make or break the project, and without them, it doesn't exist. So you could track down, or you know, Valve could very easily find the original developer of Portal, and be like, okay, we need to bring you back. And as long as they put a creative team, I think it's a female behind her, then the game would be awesome. As opposed to certain creative endeavors that are made by a group that you can't really, you know, there's certain things like if there's a movie, George Lucas is kind of the opposite of that. Like Star Wars was such a collaborative effort. George Lucas takes a lot of credit for it, but you know, his original draft for the original movies was a 12 page synopsis. So when you took everybody else out of the equation and George Lucas was just like, I'm the talent here. That's when he got the prequels.
Yeah.
So
it's amazing. Like, you know, you read about all the stories. I mean, like his wife at the time re-edited the film and got rid of a bunch of useless stuff. You know, and it's like, it's interesting. Like all those people that made those original films, he essentially just got rid of all of them and said, I'm the genius, as opposed to being like, no, you're the catalyst of this idea, but that, you know, the original like crawl to Star Wars was like, I remember from what I heard, I think I can't remember which director said it, but it was like, it was so long that he totally just rewrote it for George Lucas.
And see, that's the thing is some people's talent is recognizing talent, putting together a good team. Some people's talent is being the creative. It's the reason why you have a director and a producer and a script writer. You know, it's helpful to kind of break that down. And George Lucas was never the type that he was the creative force. He was kind of a Steve Jobs kind of character where he was good at greasing the wheels and turfing out things to people who were good at them, at delegating jobs. Like that is still a very valuable role.
Yeah.
I would say George Lucas is one of the best producers ever. I would say that that's his most valuable role, though. And the same goes for some video games. Some people are the creative force behind the game, and I think that's how Portal is. But there are other games that we will never see remade. You know, I'm still even a little wary about Shenmue, just because it's that I don't think that's a one person's creative baby. I think that's collaborative effort, and that's when you try and recreate collaborative efforts, like that's, you know, that's how you get the later seasons of Futurama. Like,
I mean,
it's still good but not great.
I mean, for Shenmue, it is a lot of the original people, character designers, writers, and all that stuff. So the only difference I think is probably a lot of the programmers who probably are still at Sega, you know. But I mean, like the guy who created Yakuza, he worked on Shenmue, you know.
But yeah. You can't tell it all.
You think? Right? What a coincidence. Yeah.
I don't see it.
But yeah, Shaq Fu.
going back to the whole Portal thing.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned this previously, but Valve, man, they just don't like releasing the third iterations of franchises.
I don't even think that they're really interested in developing games anymore. What is the last game they developed?
Probably a Counter-Strike. One of the Counter-Strike games.
the last Counter-Strike? Is that what
they
it
did
was?
A patch. I think they released a patch or something recently.
Is that really? I mean, you know, you only. I don't know. I mean, again, I don't know much about programming, but you don't need a lot of nearly as many people that make a full game to make a patch, right?
Yeah, like a full
team.
I don't
even know if they have a development studio anymore, do they?
I don't know. You know, here's the thing. Actually, they did. I think the guys who were making Half-Life were still there for a long time. But if you remember, like not long ago, the guy who wrote a lot of the original two Half-Life games, he actually just released what he wanted the last Half-Life to be. And he just changed all the names. I think he posted the story on his blog. Because he's like, it's not happening.
So apparently... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's really interesting because that would kind of suggest that the creative forces behind the games want to make them, but there's something standing in their way.
Yeah, it's a big, large, fat thing. Oh. Hey!
Hey, man, don't diss the game.
Hey, hey, listen. Nobody ever sits down and asks that guy. Like, it seems like he's kind of gone into media blackout mode. Like, he's just a legend because nobody seems to ask him about these or gets him in a room or asks him about this sort
because
of stuff.
Because he won't answer. Okay, you know, the best analogy I have for Gabe Newell, and fuck it, because we're never getting Half-Life 3, so I can make all the fat jokes I want. The best analogy I have for Gabe Newell is he's like a Snorlax. He's just this big fucker who gets in your way and will not move, will not answer your questions.
It's like, hey, Gabe, Half-Life 3, Snorlax.
Yeah.
It just is.
Hey, man, you're sitting in the middle of the path to Portal 3, Snorlax. Like, yeah, but you need to move your fat ass so we can, like, it's, we can't get down this road without you. Just sleeping.
He rolls over on somebody. Ah!
So apparently the last game to be released by Valve is called The Lab. It's a virtual reality game.
Huh. Yeah,
for the HTC Vive.
Okay.
Before that, Left 4 Dead Survivors in 2014, which is an arcade game. It says arcade.
Interesting.
Counter-Strike, Nexon Zombies. It was probably like an add-on. So, yeah, Valve is kind of pretty disinterested with making games now. Dota is making them so much money.
Yeah. They're at that point where it's just like, we're printing money. Literally, other video game companies give us money. All of you give us money. We're just printing money here. We don't need to make any more games. Just sad.
That's a shame because that means they could, with that kind of money, they could just finance all kinds.
Yep. They could just keep doing iterations of their own games, and I mean, they could release a console with all these games, and I'd buy it.
Yeah.
It's like if Valve decides to release a console, not a Steam box, a console.
The Valve box.
The Valve box, and say, okay, this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna launch the console, and it's gonna launch with Left 4 Dead 3. And later on in the year, we're gonna release Team Fortress 3, and then the new Dota the next year. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the year, we're gonna release a new Portal at the end of the year. And then the next year, we're gonna release the new Counter-Strike. And then at the end of the year, we're gonna release a new Half-Life. I'm fucking sold.
Yeah, I would be out the door halfway through that announcement.
Like, we have Microsoft. We talked about them earlier, how they have trouble releasing like exclusive games that people kind of want to play. And it's like Valve is sitting on a fucking gold mine. I forgot they released Alien Swarm. I liked Alien Swarm. I don't know if you guys played it. So it's. And I played it on my PC. I don't know if it came out in the consoles. It's a top-down shooter. The co-op, it's pretty good. So yeah, I just really wish they develop games.
Yeah. Can't you know, be kind of cool? And I'm sure Valve would never do this. But what if Xbox decided to buy all those games?
What? Oh no!
Essentially, the Orange Box. They bought.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, what if Microsoft bought Valve?
Well, I don't know if that would happen.
That was part of that rumor.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, it was part of the rumor before when I was talking about that it might buy EA and they were like,
oh,
they
Steam
and the whole thing. And I don't know if they would buy Valve altogether, but they were definitely mentioning Steam.
They couldn't afford sell. That shit.
Yeah. Well, they can. It's just it'd be expensive as hell. It's like Disney bought 20th Century Fox. It's like Valve is not – I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think Valve is worth as more as 20th Century Fox.
Yeah, I don't think Microsoft has Disney money though.
Yeah, it's possible. It might be close, but yeah, Disney is just they're going to run the country pretty soon, so – pretty much are right now.
Yeah, somehow they're gonna not be considered a monopoly. It's like no,
it's Disney. Everybody loves Disney. Oh.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like if you ever look at any of the, you know, we're getting into non-gaming stuff, but you know, Disney, all of Disney's famous characters by now should actually be public domain. But unfortunately, the way they work is they get the rhetoric changed around. To where they could keep the rights to all of their characters.
Isn't that the whole reason why somebody do some of those stupid direct-to-movie releases so that they keep the characters in perpetuity or whatever it is?
You know, that's all actually why you see a lot of, you know, kind of obscure characters kind of show up in movies or in they put out these little re-releases and stuff like that. So they don't lose the rights to any of the content. But if you remember what happened to Warner Brothers, they actually lost the rights to a bunch of their cartoons because they didn't use the characters or put the films out. So they're just in public domain in limbo.
Wait, are you saying that when Disney takes the Cinderella DVDs off the market and then releases a special edition that they're creating artificial scarcity and then just renewing their license?
Yes. That's exactly what they're doing.
I'm aghast.
Yep. That's exactly what they're doing. It's also the same thing if you want to talk about comic books. It's the same thing. When I worked at Marvel Comics as an intern, what we used to do is do searches through all the different characters. And we had like a listing of the ones that hadn't been seen in a while. If they haven't been seen in a while, there is a good chance that they could lose the rights to those characters. And they end up being in public domain. So if they want to keep a certain amount of characters around, that's why they have these guys just show up. Hey, look, Brother Voodoo just showed up out of nowhere. It's because they want to keep the license to Brother Voodoo, so that's why he's showing up and stuff like that. Crazy, right?
It makes a kind of sense. I mean, I knew Sony was doing it with Spider-Man for years.
Oh yeah, they're totally trying to keep the rights to Spider-Man, you know, by putting out, you know, mediocre movies like those Amazing Spider-Man.
I mean, it was pretty obvious when the timing of the first, like, Spider-Man 3 came out, and then Amazing Spider-Man, I want to say, was what came out shortly after that. And everyone was like, didn't we just get a Spider-Man movie, like, a year or two ago?
And then they had to restart the origin again. Literally in a few years, we literally got, like, two retellings of Spider-Man in movie form.
Yep.
It was bad. Yeah, it was bad timing.
Yeah.
I like how Marvel then just skipped over his origin. They're just like, nah, it's been done enough.
Yeah, they don't even have the Uncle Ben. None of the Uncle Ben stuff in there. It's just like, go, we're doing it. Tony Stark's Uncle Ben now.
Pretty much. Actually, yeah, he pretty much was.
Mm-hmm.
He even gave him kind of like a similar speech in the movie, like with the great power comes great responsibility stuff.
Yeah, with the great power comes great responsibility without actually saying it.
Right.
Yeah, but it left enough blank time that the whole Uncle Ben thing could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're ambiguous about it enough. They didn't, you know, write out his origin story. They're just like, mm-hmm. that's not important.
Yeah. So yeah, we're actually out of topics right now. So let's go with the de facto. What are you guys playing?
I'm playing a weird little Japanese game. It's Monster Hunter. PSA for everybody, the Ryu content just came out. Ryu. But you have to know somebody who has a copy of Street Fighter. So track down a buddy who has Street Fighter, have them launch the mission, and you can join them. I believe it's special arena quests or something. You can then join those missions and unlock that content yourself. You cannot launch that mission if you don't own Street Fighter. So, buddy up, and if you have a copy of Street Fighter, help some homies out and share that quest.
Well, we knew somebody with one, Tony.
Yeah,
We
well,
could just.
and
We could just.
for those of us not lucky enough on the podcast, or you can search for them by spamming through the SOS messages looking for arena quests, but be quick because those things fill up fast. But your best bet is just going to be to
That's a pretty interesting way to kind of go about this sort of special DLC. It's like, okay, you don't need to have a, if you don't have Street Fighter, you can't activate this mission without joining somebody who has it.
I mean, I've seen things like that before where, like, if you have this other game, then you get this bonus content. And it's looking at it through that lens, it's non-irritating. And then I appreciate the fact they're like, well, if you don't have this, you just kind of need to know somebody who has, then you can piggyback off of them, or just look for a stranger who has it and then piggyback off of them. So they give you a workaround. So I'm not entirely unhappy. Maybe I got the rope-a-dope because they, they showed me the stick before they showed me the carrot. But for the most part, I think it's pretty common to have, if you have a save file of this other game, it unlocks this special costume. I think that's kind of neat.
Yeah, I think so.
So you need to own Street Fighter V.
You need to have a Street Fighter V save file, and it unlocks the ability to launch this quest. If you don't, anybody who does have a Street Fighter V save file can launch the quest, and you can join them.
Yeah.
Including SOS flares or strangers or whatever. So, but the easiest way is going to be if you know somebody. If you don't know somebody, and this has been recommended on several threads that I've read, if you don't know somebody, for those of you that don't know, you don't have to just jump into an online session. You can match make your sessions from level of experience from beginner to experience to any. You can look for certain servers doing certain quests. So just jump into one looking for arenas, and that'll allow you to join the quest a little bit easier, give you a higher chance to actually see that quest pop and get in there before it's full. I would not be surprised if you didn't actually see certain lobbies pop up for farming these quests, and it'll actually say that in the description. So utilize that matchmaking system if you don't know somebody that already has this content. Utilize that matchmaking system, look for those arena quests, and piggyback off somebody else, because everybody wants to throw Hadoukens at dragons.
How does it work? Is it just a pose?
I'm not actually sure. What I'm thinking it probably does is it just replaces your slinger animation with a Hadouken. So,
That makes sense. That does make sense.
So I have Street Fighter V. I don't know if I have a save file. Well, I didn't. I don't think I don't remember.
Is it Street Fighter V or the arcade edition of Street Fighter V?
I think it was just Street Fighter V. I'm not entirely sure, because it just this happened like a few hours before I think we started this podcast. There was an update file that rolled through, and that just launched the content. So still a little bit sparse, but for what it's worth, for those of you that be like, man, I hear it's out, son of a bitch, I can't find it, don't tear your hair out. You may not be able to see it if you don't have the save file. So you're gonna have to kind of go around the backwards way. Just trying to save some of y'all the hassle of trying to figure out where this fucking new downloadable quest content came in, and navigating through menus for hours and getting frustrated. So there you go. Now you know. Knowing's half the battle.
So anything else? It's just you're just the monster hunting, huh?
I mean, I've been catching up on a lot of art. I haven't even had a chance to do a whole lot of monster hunting this week. So I'm planning to try, and everybody's passed me up at this point.
I'm not.
Well, yeah, no, man, that was actually what I was gonna say. I have a few people who are still kind of catching up, and you're one of them. That I'm kind of hanging back and helping. I'm doing my little expeditions, hoping to fight a dragon soon. But man, I thought that an easy way to actually go about getting the information for some of these tracking quests was doing these optional missions. Tony swore up and down, man, that you have to go on these expeditions, and while those work, the way that the game is set up makes me feel like
no, you just got to go to you just got to go to the open exhibition mode.
Well, you can do that, but the game also tells you that by completing optional quests, it also fills that bar.
Yeah, it also does.
Yeah, and it does it way quicker.
It does it about 10 points or so, 10 points or 20 points.
That's what I thought, and I was like, it does it quicker, so this seems like the game is telling me this is your point where you go back and farm materials for that armor set that you were really wanting. So I've been doing that, and I actually feel like it might be slower than the expeditions. That or these three dragon quests, you just have to do a shitload of tracking, because I have done a good, 10 side quests, and I am like halfway on each of them.
Wow. It took me maybe it took me 10 to fill all three of them.
Really? And you were just doing optional missions, or were you doing expeditions in there too?
So this is what I would do. So I knew it was the waste, it was the Run Vale, and it was the Ancient Forest, right? So I accepted optional quests, and I would land, and then I knew where the tracks would be, or the vicinity where the tracks would be, and I'd just, oh, get one of the footprints or something like that, and then I'd just continue on with the mission, complete the mission, and the meter would fill up like a lot, like pretty significantly compared to just doing expeditions. So
So
that's what I
maybe
wanted.
it's a hybrid of both then, because I've been booking it straight for the monster.
Okay, maybe that's why.
I run at the monster like I've got personal beef with him.
Well, it's funny, whenever you're doing those sorts of expeditions, like they usually have, like on the way to the monster, they usually just have like random footprints and stuff that just keep appearing on the way there.
Yeah, sometimes they just appear in random places that on your way to the monster. But yeah, but sometimes they're just in weird locations. And if you realize where those locations are, and you can just, once you start a mission, you just like, oh, let me take the long way to the monster and pass through here to find some tracks. And if you find those tracks, then you can just move on to the monster. And once you complete it, you get a pretty significant fill in that meter.
Yeah, but I for me, I was doing Pink Rathian stuff and just kind of going through different levels and getting all kinds of stuff. My big the big I'm more of an explorer-y type of person, so like right now I'm trying to find these little glyphs on the walls for those little kind of pygmy guys.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to find out what that does. It's a little bit hard to find out where those things are. So, Carlos, obviously you're not playing Monster Hunter World.
Yeah, man, I'm playing that's exclusively what I've been playing, Monster Hunter. I'm a little ahead of you guys. Brett, I'm pretty much done with what Brett's doing, and that's where I left off. I'm about to duel with the Elder Dragons. I did some grind. I might still do grind a little bit for some more stuff, but I pretty much have all the Nergigante armor and a Nergigante hammer, so I'm pretty much set to fight those three Elder Dragons. And once I knock those down to the final boss, man, I'm almost done with this. This I've accumulated. I'm
Oh,
really
there's
like, oh
more.
well, yeah, there's obviously more, but just story wise, that's kind of it. But yo, man, I'm so surprised. Like when I was looking towards like what I was playing this year before the year started, I'm like, oh, it's God of War's Spider-Man. Oh, Monster Hunter's coming out. It's cool. I'm 60 hours in. I'm almost 70 hours, and I'm like, damn, I didn't expect this. So it's a really pleasant surprise when something like this grabs your attention from, yeah, man. I've been enjoying it all the way, and especially playing with you guys. I always enjoy playing with you guys. Like, I'm more of a co-op person more than anything. So yeah, just having to interact with you guys and leveling up and beating the monsters and having, yo, man, we have some of the craziest like epic moments. I was playing with Tony and Isaac, our friend Isaac, and there was this one part in where I had to fight a Rathalos, and either Rathalos or a Rathian, but in the I think it's the Ancient Forest. There's like a nest on top of the map, right? Where there's like a little dam that's covering water. So we got to a point where we were fighting it for a long time. They got up there, and the wa we broke open the little dam, so the water like sunk them down. And I jumped from the top of the map and just like held a little action button on my axe mm-hmm. while jumping down, and I landed a hit from the top of the map on the Rathalos and killed it.
Yeah, that like, that dam hits for a lot of damage.
Yeah. Yep. And so yeah, man, I was upset as hell because I tried to save it, but the share features on PlayStation is so messed up.
Yeah.
So I pressed the share button, right? And I'm like, okay, cool. I saved the clip. Mm-hmm. So we kept playing, and then I'm like, we finished, and I'm like, okay, let me check the clip out. I pressed the share button again, and it saved like 14 minutes of the last things we were doing. I'm like, where the hell is the clip? Didn't get saved up, man. I was so mad.
Yeah, I usually, like, you can have it set up a certain way. Like, the way I have my share button set is that one tap does the screenshot, and then a hold push actually starts the and really? You could also actually...
Yeah, you can program the button.
You can have it set up so like that, where, like, or you can have it do it in, like, where it will just continuously record in the background. And then you can just kind of choose what things that you want and just edit them out.
Okay. I'm going to...
Yeah, I haven't I just use the share button for, like, taking photos and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, man, because Monster Hunter has too many epic moments. I need to save some of them.
Cool.
Dude, this game is just enjoyable to play. I don't even know when I beat this game if I'm...
Gonna I'll probably stop.
Just go back and keep playing. This game is... has me addicted, like Souls level. Like I want to go and hunt monsters because mm-hmm. I'm like,
and Brett, there's,
yeah.
One of the crazy things about all this, it's a game we all enjoyed.
Yeah.
Dude, even Tony, like Tony is enjoying a like online multiplayer hack and slash, like just everything about this game, like says that a lot of people shouldn't like it, but it's pulled everybody together. It's a weird thing, man.
It's the replacement Destiny.
it's what Destiny wishes it were, man.
Yeah.
So, Carlos, did you get to play any of Shadow?
No, Monster Hunter has monopolized my time. Yeah, Shadow of the Colossus will always be there. It's a game.
Always be there.
It's just like
it doesn't take very long to beat. To be honest,
it doesn't. I played it for maybe 30 minutes, and I beat the first three bosses, or first three colossi.
Yeah.
So it's a game that doesn't really take much of your time. It's really more of a game that sort of engulfs you in the world. Mm-hmm. It's like you're just riding your horse and like looking at the vast map, and you're like, man, what's the history of this place? It's like you just think about it. It's a game it would have worked amazing in VR. This game would be amazing in VR because it's just the world is the game more sort of than the combat, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I mean, from me playing it, I like, you know, I've said this before, I'm more of an explorer type of person. So like in general, I like to go around, and this one, they did a lot of extra, they put some extra stuff into the world where you can kind of find secrets. I have my map set up what I'm going to do before. I played a little bit of it. I mean, I'm mostly just going around, looking around the environments and looking for hidden things before I even start the first Colossus. Cause you can do that. You don't need to go to the first Colossus at all. You just keep dicking around in the world and just looking at stuff.
I guess the only downside of that is there's just a whole bunch of clouds covering your whole map.
Yeah, there's a bunch of clouds covering your map. Because, as soon as you beat a Colossus, the map gets... So, Adam, what are you playing?
Horizon Zero Dawn.
What?
Yeah, just... all right, so that's a whole other story. That whole great, like, shit. But I got past it. I figured out what to do. I'll talk about it later. But, playing that. Of course, Call of Duty mode. Need for Speed, Payback. Just going through that every once in a while. I want to 2K18. The version is still broken, so there goes that. Let's see, what Homefront A new home front, that's all right. That's fun. That's another one where it's great to play with friends, but it's a weird co-op system. It's like certain missions you could do co-op, you can't do all of them. It's not a jump in, jump out. It's weird. But you always have like this weekend playing more Division Dark Zone, teaming up with people. We're gonna run in trophies in there. And for leisure time, I'll jump into some Madden, throw the ball around. That's what I love, just jumping all over the place.
So are you one of those, are you an Ask Madden guy, or are you just, I'm just gonna, are you one of those people that like meticulously looks through the plays, or are you someone that just audibles off of a play?
No. It depends. It's like I know about different play types, but I'm not like a pro at it. Like between a nickel and a dime and setting up the formations, it depends on the plays, But I like to pick my own plays. I don't like to always say yeah, pick whatever the coach said, whatever. Especially when it's on deep, set up my own lines and stuff, and it's fun, just to jump in there and play. Not so great at playing in the online, but I'll play just some of the franchise mode and. I did that season. Now that career mode, that story mode, that's how you do a Telltale type game. That, oh man, the storytelling on it, and it's pretty much QTEs. A lot of people bitched about it, but it's like a Telltale's game. It was a story based game. It really was, and I think that's a change because a lot of these sport games, it's not. It's just go in there, complete these challenges, but you're still playing the game. It's like, oh, I'm just doing challenges, score 2 goals, like the way they did in FIFA. Not that creative. This was very creative, and the acting pretty good. Only paid $3 for it. And
Using that PlayStation money.
yeah, I got that. Yeah, the PlayStation money. So, but besides that, yeah, just jumping in and out. And I was playing, oh, trying to do Until Dawn, me and Rich
Oh.
from the co-op. We were doing that because he got the platinum in it. And my thing is that it just, I always screw up on the one QTE and it messes everything. So then we did a share play where he was calling it out, real quick. XQ, this and that. But then even that, it was like there was a
There's
delay
a
and it was
delay.
just, we were like, oh, this sucks, And I was trying to find a guide of just showing me the QTE. So hey, if anybody out there knows about any guides, let me know. Hit me up on Twitter or something because I'm finding a bunch of guides, but it's like it'll say, oh, go through this door, and then it just says QTE. Yeah, that's the thing. I want to know the QTE because it's so quick. The prompts, I would like to just fly through it. I already beat the game once. I'm trying to get the good ending. I would just like to know what square, triangle, whatever it's real quick. But so yeah, we tried to do that. And what else? There was something else I was playing. Oh, and Mario Odyssey.
Yay. Oh, nice.
I just. It's okay, but it's not what I wanted, but it's all right, I just run around and, I'm early on. I just went down the upside down pyramid. So,
Oh, so you're
but it's
pretty.
funny because I take turns with a coworker, right? So I let him on his line. He's like, "Yo, I just saw it because that you could have different profiles. I mean, different save points." And he's like, "Yo, I just saw you're still early on." He's like, "I just passed New Donk City." I was like, "Oh, okay." And he doesn't have a Switch, and he has no plan of getting it. He's like, "I'll just keep beating it from yours." There you go. So I was like, "All right." So yeah, but I'm running around and well, those are it. That's what I do. For anybody who knows that sees me on my on the PS4 or whatever, I'm just constantly. If I get bored, it's just like switch to something else. Or if I get stuck in something, I'll get back to it. Let me go to something else. Because if you spend too much time dealing with one issue, like what I was dealing with, Horizon glitch, and that's what people are calling it because they never fixed it. And for those listen real quick, it's just if you go, I went into a section. There was a bunch of monsters. I set up my traps. I had my arrows. Boom, boom, boom. I killed like four or five of them. There was two in the distance, and I was near a bonfire. Ran to the bonfire to do a quick save, right? Go off to kill them. Well, a third I didn't see came, jumped on me, and killed me. No problem, right? I saved. Well, when that loads up, I don't have my bombs. I mean, my traps. I don't have my arrows. I don't have any of that stuff. And all those monsters I killed have all. So how? Why did it bring one part and not all of it? If you're gonna go back that far, then give me all the stuff that I set up that killed those monsters. Why are they still gone? And now it was a pain in the ass, and I was really stuck because I had like little to no health. That's the other thing. It brought me back with like little to no health. I couldn't understand it with no pouches, and I had pouches. It just stripped me of everything, and it was a pain. So, basically what I did mention they had something similar to this happen, like a cave. They change the difficulty to easy, and then you'll notice that some of those monsters disappear, and then most of them are like one hit. And that's what I did. I switched it down to easy, went in, boom, 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 and then I switched it back. I got out of that point. So that was a pain in the ass. But yeah, you know, the story is interesting. It's different. It sort of has that Mad Max feel, you know. And then that's it.
That's cool. I mean, I guess I go for me. Mine is the simple one. Simple one. I've been playing Monster Hunter World here and there. I mean, I'm trying to get a bunch of work done. I mean, my schedule is not that crazy now where I can actually sit down and play for a few hours. But I need to be careful about it because I get sucked into the void when it comes to that game. You know?
Right.
Where you just kind of like, hey, look, I'm going to play a tent. Holy shit, it's 3 a.m. in the morning. You know? Where did it go? So yeah, so that's that. They've been playing that. Right now, I'm like working toward the like the Pink Therathian section, and yeah, and I'm right now I'm just kind of exploring the different environments, these little hieroglyphs that these walls, because I want to see what that opens up. Because I've been more of the other side of the game, where it's the explorative side, where I look for all the little cats and all kinds of the other things in there. And if you ever look at my profile, I actually have like a really high unity because I just run around with the cats from the environments all the time. So like my cat now has the ability to charm any of those lizards, those kind of lizards from the Rotten Vale. Now he can also charm the flying one. So now he can just like, if there's one around, he'll just hang around. We just leave him there for a little bit and he'll just jump on top of him and ride him around, which is cool. And the Jagras says he can also do that. Like if there's like one Jagras there, he'll jump on the Jagras and he'll like ride the Jagras like a little, like a vehicle. And then I still have Shadow of the Colossus, which is really cool because, you know, I really enjoy that game. And also, like I was saying, I kind of want to look around through the world and see what things that they kind of added to it. There was this one thing that Blue Point added to the game, which were these little coins or like enlightenments or whatever you call. So anyway, somebody actually, I think I mentioned this on the show, somebody actually found out what happens when you get all of them. It opens like a secret passageway underneath the castle, which nobody, you know, which wasn't there in the original game. And it gives you this really cool, awesome sword. Yeah. So I'm just going to go around like that, get all the little shrines of worship and stuff like that, and then fight the good stuff.
Nice.
So yeah, that's it. Like we're out of content. I think somebody mentioned the NPDs. I'm not exactly sure where to find the NPDs. Tony's the master of that. He's this guy. So yeah, I mean, just to give you an update on Tony, he's still stuck in Manhattan. Trying to get back from the city. But here's the thing, for all of you New Yorkers out there, or people who've been to New York or are going to New York, one thing, no man's land. I'll tell you when no man's land. At 9 o'clock, 9 o'clock in New York. You know they call it the city that never sleeps, but at 9 o'clock, that's when this train start just going screwy because that's around the time
to the outer boroughs.
Like if you live in Manhattan, that's fine. But to the outer boroughs, everything starts to get screwy where it's like you get onto the, you know, one train doesn't go here because they're doing all this.
That's where you start doing the maintenance.
Yeah, they do maintenance and construction in those times. So you'll find like some trains that are usually go to one stop, don't stop there, or they'll decide to combine a couple of lines onto the same line and then have a smaller amount of trains. So Tony is stuck in that. Which is the worst thing ever, especially trying to get home right now. I said, we're texting him right now. I'm like, you should get on an Uber and just take it home, man. Fuck the train.
Do those come, like, are those really expensive to get from?
I took an Uber around where my mom lives is fairly close to where, so it could probably be around 35 to 40, I would
say. Damn, that's a lot.
It's actually, yeah, the thing is that in New York City, they have the Uber is, every single Uber driver has to be part of the taxi and limousine service. Right. So they bump the price to pay that because essentially what's happening is taxi and limousine services, you know, money for the city.
Well, they pay so much for those medallions, and that was the whole thing when Uber came along. It was like undermining the whole worth and value of those medallions, which cost them, you know, some of them up to almost $1 million, depending on the medallion. So
they're trying to compensate. But anyway, that's this, that. And definitely Tony will be back next show. So I guess I'm going to close down the show. Thank you all for showing up and watching us live on SoundCloud, as well as watching a bit later. I'm actually vamping so that I can get the show notes. So. Thank you for watching and listening. What was that?
I was just going to say, yo, man, I can fill in some time.
Thank you for watching and listening. Subscribe to us on subscribe to Throwdown on SoundCloud, iTunes, and YouTube. Follow us on Mixer, Twitter, and Facebook at Throwdown Show. Links are in the description below. Yes, as well as Twitch. Links are in the description below. I am your host, Emilio Lopez, and I was joined by Carlos Romero.
Yo, guys, go watch anime. You know what to do.
Yo, have man. Yo, man, this is the manga god.
I'm the anime god here, chilling in the cut. Catch y'all later.
Brett Murdoch.
Deuces, everybody. Happy hunting.
Adam Vale.
Yeah, have a good weekend coming up, and I'll see whoever wants to jump in tomorrow for a Friday night WrestleCast. So we do another 8 hours of just talking wrestling. So get ready for that.
And if you're not into wrestling, we might do a gaming stream.
There you go.
Yeah, well, I think our usual gaming. Well, tomorrow is actually Tony Polanco's birthday. Well, now it is Tony's birthday.
There it's you on go. The 16th. He's gonna be 15.
It's on the 16th. So yeah, happy birthday to Tony. We'll probably tell him again on throw it on your questions. I have a small plan. I'm thinking there's a concert that's happening in New York City, and that I might be able to get tickets when we go tomorrow. So if that does happen, there may or may not be a Throwdown plays.
What concert? Who's playing?
It's called G3, which is Joe Satriani.
Oh, Joe, he still plays?
Oh, hell yeah.
He's still throwing a guitar?
He's still playing guitar. Joe Satriani, he just released an album. Joe Satriani, it's, who's the other guys? John Petrucci from the band Dream Theater, and the guitarist from Def Leppard.
So three guitarists, what are they doing, a battle off? Or?
No, they all have their own set. They all have their own maybe 30-minute sets or hour sets or whatever. And then at the end, they do like an ultra jam and they play whatever song. It's really cool. We've gone to them like multiple times. And so it's going to be at the Beacon Theater. So, you know, hopefully I might be able to get tickets. I'm a little bit late to the party. I was supposed to get a molly before, but I was like, but anyway, yeah. Happy birthday to Tony. And I'll see you later, guys.
Peace out, everyone.